Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the UHi Midway's Bubble Podcast. Today's topic is about where members of the lab community get their news and political opinions. To start, please go around and introduce yourselves with your name, pronouns, and your role at UHi.
Hi, I'm Miss Augustine. I am a high school librarian at the lab school. She, her.
Hi, I'm Mark Rewatch. I am an English teacher here at lab. He, him.
I'm Will Trone. I am a junior at lab and my pronouns are he, him.
Awesome. Okay, so we're just gonna get started. Our first question is about what sources do you use to get your political news and then also sort of your political opinions? And then what do you look for in those news sources, or what do you appreciate about those news sources you choose to use?
I read the New York Times religiously. Just about every day, although not, it's kind of nice the way that it's set up online, in that we have, it gives you like a little blurb for every article. So even if you don't have time to read every article, you're just getting a nice overview of what's happening in the world. I recognize that it is a more left of center source. And so I occasionally will peek and look at Fox News just to sort of see what a different perspective is saying about what's happening in the world. I also sometimes look at CNN, although I find it a little bit more of a editorializing and or opinion-based news more than factual news, which I appreciate that about the New York Times. I feel like they really try to supply a lot of information to back up what they're saying, and they do really great investigative journalism. I also listen to NPR every night. As yet another source. And I like a lot of the live feeds that they do, the interviews they do with people to flesh out stories. And so those are my main go-tos, but I look at other things as well.
I'll go off that and say very similar in that the New York Times is my go-to. But then what I like to balance that is because yes, the New York Times may lean a little to the left, it's still fairly central. So what I put on the other side of that is not Fox, which goes too far the other direction to me. So we're like, I would put Fox and CNN in very similar places in terms of how they deviate from objectivity. I actually have a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, which has a more conservative leaning, but at least it's journalistic side, not the opinion. The opinion is thought of very differently, but within the journalism field, the actual reporting for the Wall Street Journal is considered really, really highly. Those reporters get their facts. So I get that sort of more conservative business perspective. And then I get the New York Times perspective, just in terms of how they pick stories and what they're going to put on their front page. And I think that gives me some pretty good balance. I would agree that as the more...
I would say my relationship with the news is not the best. I think it's a little bit fraught. I don't have a lot of time to sit down every night and just look at the New York Times or look at some other publication. Occasionally I do look at the New York Times. I would say that's not particularly often, maybe once a week, maybe once every other week. Occasionally I'll listen to an episode from The Daily, which is also from the New York Times, which is the podcast. And I'll listen to them maybe two of those a week. But I would say a majority of my information about what's going on in the world is either from my parents, my sister, other classmates, other friends, and also social media.
I was sort of addicted to CNN at one point early in the pandemic because in the election, because you get so much fast news there. But I so quickly realized that if I checked CNN and then I checked New York Times and I checked other sources, it was amazing how often the stories never made it anywhere else because there was actually no substance to them. The headlines were huge. And then when you read the article, even the article didn't back up the headline, and they did a really bad job and continue to do a really bad job in my mind of differentiating between what are opinion pieces and what are news pieces. And that became frustrating. Opinion becomes, because there's so much of it out there right now, figuring out who you trust to go to for an opinion is a little bit different animal than just a particular publication. That seems to me to go down to a particular person.
I agree, Mark. I'm really, there's a few journalists that I really do follow. And I'd say I had to pick one publication where I get opinion pieces that I trust that influence me. I would say The New Yorker. And I read that every week. I feel like a lot of the writers in that publication are not just great reporters, but great thinkers.
Which I think social media plays a really interesting role in journalism and news publications. I think in one way, it's a really good way to keep people engaged in the world. It's a really accessible way to keep people engaged in the world. But on the other hand, it's not very reliable. So I follow on Snapchat, I want to say it's NBC News. It's targeted towards younger people, I think middle schoolers and high schoolers. It gives me a good rundown of what's going on in the world, but not much more. And it's not always the most reliable either. And there's also like Instagram and I want to say sometimes TikTok has news. And I almost never believe it at face value, but it usually helps me think about what might be going on in the world. So I can actually, if I see something that might interest me or something that surprises me, I can go search it up somewhere else.
I spend very, very little time on social media. My wife is on it a lot. She does a lot more keeping in touch with friends, and a lot more of her work deals with social media. And she would argue that she sees a lot of really positive things. Like when people are sharing headlines of really good pieces of writing that you can go to from reliable sources that you don't have time to find yourself. And people are sort of helping you get to things that you can learn from. I think that's great. A couple of years ago, Ms. McCullough and I did a seminar for Social Justice Week where we looked at the downside of social media, where it becomes about, well, this is what lots of people on social media think, so it's what you should think, as opposed to looking at facts and building an opinion from facts. And at that point, New York Times had actually done this fantastic article through extensive polling. And it is, if you were to poll people on social media, what would the issue look like? And if you were to poll people across the entire population, what would it look like? And it's completely different. It's so much more moderate when you pull beyond social media, and social media is so much more extreme and binary in the views that are presented. And it can feel like if that's your only window, it can feel like that's where the world is. You really have to be careful, I think, and not let what people think start to become what is true.
I think we all are affected by what is sometimes called motivated reasoning. And that means looking for things that we already believe. And that may take place with the news sources that we choose. I'm very aware that I have a liberal bias in my thinking. And so I'm drawn to sources that I think will support that. But I think with social media, it gets even narrower. And that's the little bit of a fear. I agree, Mr. Krewatch, completely that there is a lot of great articles shared through social media, but there's also a lot of just, you know, falsehoods and stuff. I just think it's really hard right now because there's so many options and places to go to find information. Will, do you feel like you've run into a lot of things that have ended up not being true?
Oh, so much. And I, especially on TikTok, misinformation is rampant. And it's really distressing because a lot of people cannot see that very clear misinformation is misinformation. They think it's true. So I think one example is over the summer, this one person on Twitter, which the tweet eventually got moved to TikTok, tweeted that the genocide in Xinjiang province of the Uyghur Muslims in China, they said that the death count had exceeded the death count of the Holocaust, which for many, like face value, it's, you should have lots of
suspect,
right? And that people were taking it for face value. People were going far with that information. And it's distressing to see how many people aren't actually taking the time to, first of all, like think about like, does this even make sense to be true? But also to go seek out the information. It took me 2 minutes to go find the original tweet and see that it was not mm-hmm. based in fact.
But you know how to do that. Think about all the people that don't know how to do that or just take that first thing at face value. I keep wanting the law to step in. I mean, were any of you thinking as you listened to people repeat and repeat and repeat falsehoods about the election and the voting machines, weren't you saying like, isn't this libel? Like they're actually saying something that is verifiably untrue, that is about a particular company that is going to lose that company money, and they know it's untrue. That's like, well, that's all the qualifications
for libel. The voting machine company is charging libel. They did.
And then it finally happened, and all of a sudden Fox News and people are settling for millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
But you just wondered why did it take so long? Like, how are you allowed to stand up for 2 months and say things that are verifiably false?
Right.
In that case, it was because it was about a company, right?
Yes.
If it was just about another politician, it's a lot harder to do, but-
Right. There's a financial punishment for the word. Right. That's where I think the libel can stick. But otherwise, I think it is really hard. It's just it's just free speech.
Yeah, so much has come under the umbrella of free speech right now. It's scary. I mean, it's you know, and we understand why it's protected, but the lying that's allowed to happen.
Yeah.
And when is a lie a lie? Is it just out of context? Is it just facts out of context? Is it actually wrong alternative facts?
Sorry, interesting that many of you expressed distrust with alternative media. According to Pew Research, trust and readership in mainstream media is at the lowest it's been in nearly a century. I know, Will, you said that you don't consume a lot of mainstream media. What additional value do you and do you think others see from alternative news sources that mainstream media can't provide? And I know, Mr. Krewatch, you talked about, you know, perhaps criminalizing some of this behavior. How should we address the misinformation under the alternative media?
Okay. This one's difficult. I mean, I would say that fear of the mainstream media has been a tactic for politicians to use to just basically scare people out of reading mainstream media sources, particularly Trump. I mean, that was a huge part of his campaign, saying that the mainstream media is lying. That's not to say that the left isn't doing it either. And I think there are definitely problems with the mainstream media.
I can totally understand that those Pew Research numbers. The whole media landscape has just changed so dramatically in the last 20, 30 years. I mean, when I was growing up, you have like your local paper, newspaper in print, no internet. And then maybe if you're really interested in the news, you might subscribe to a more major paper. For example, I lived in Michigan, so the Detroit Free Press. But I don't think I saw New York Times until I moved to Chicago as an adult. So it just, now though, there's so many sources. And I think attention and time are two critical pieces of this. And where are people already spending their attention? If they're already on social media, then it's really convenient to gather news from there. Where, you know, rather than go to yet another source where they don't have a lot of time to do that. But if they're already, you know, where is their attention? Their attention might be on information that's sent to them by their close friends. Kind of like what you were saying, Will, like, you know, who you're sitting down with at the dinner table, like who's influencing you and who's got your attention. And it's places you're probably already, you know, residing, places that are fun, places that offer entertainment. So to have news mixed in with social media, I mean, and rather than, you know, just going to a single source like the New York Times that doesn't offer a lot of other, I mean, I play the puzzles, but doesn't offer a lot of other fun and games, it makes so much sense to me that people don't have time to do that. And they've already kind of got some sources going on in their feeds. And so I think that's probably a trend that's here to stay. And I know that major newspapers are doing everything they can to try to keep readership, but it's tough right now. There's just so many options and everyone has a limited attention span.
The fact that people trust alternative, well, if you've got confirmation bias because they're going to the alternative news sources that say what they want to hear, of course they trust them. So I don't know that that study is really proving anything about alternative sources being better. It doesn't make the fact that they trust it doesn't make it's true. And that goes back even to the social media. Like a lot of people are going to like it and trust it and pass it on. That doesn't mean it's true even. And a lot of those same people would be the ones saying they don't trust mainstream media. And that again goes back to my point. I hate it when you give people good arguments. And CNN has given people lots of good arguments for not trusting mainstream news. Their whole, when you just look at the way the page is set up, it's not trustworthy about where they put opinion. You don't even know where opinion is versus news sometimes.
Mixed up, yeah.
Yeah, they mix it up and they put in, and it's, you have, it's hard to tell ads. And so, I mean, it's really problematic. But I want to be careful on the, I'm not saying that we should criminalize more than we have. I'm saying the way things are, the laws that are already in place only apply to certain things, like an actual lie against someone that costs them something in a measurable way, which is usually going to be money. So journalists have to make choices. We have to expect them to be responsible. We have to expect that there is a foundation in place. I'm not saying alternative media can't be great, it can, but we have examples of where it's really manipulative.
And Will, I think you made a really good point about politicians criticizing the media, and there suddenly become this war between, I mean, maybe it's always been there to some extent, but in the last 4 years in particular, this war between politicians and mainstream media. And that certainly hasn't helped anything.
I mean, can we just go back and look at where this started 4 years ago? That we had an inauguration and a certain number of people went to it. And the president stood up and said, more people were in my inauguration than any other inauguration. And there are pictures of it. There are actual pictures of it. And one of his press people, Kellyanne Conway, stood up and said, the president uses alternative facts. Mm-hmm. That's where we started this war 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember reading opinion pieces back then, and they said, if he can make you question whether the number of people in this picture is less or more than the number of people in this picture, how are you ever going to argue policy that's nuanced? Mm-hmm. How are you going to ever argue something about immigration, where there are actual numbers of particular kids? But of course, there were kids that were separated from their parents under who? The Obama administration. But how many, and was it different? Those nuanced, really complex arguments, if you can't even get people to agree on how many people are on the wall, on the mall in Washington, then other people are just gonna step out of those other arguments. They're not even gonna wanna participate. Because they're gonna think they don't know enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think he won a huge amount when he did that. I mean, that really turned, to me, that turned news upside down. Because if you get blamed for being biased by showing a picture of an empty mall, like, well,
yeah.
What is objectivity?
Yes, exactly. I'm hopeful that the current presidential administration will be less cantankerous with the media, and that might start to heal that relationship a little bit. I mean, I don't know. We may be swinging back a little bit more towards trust in that arena, but I do think that just the nature of the internet is going to continue to push falsehoods and splinter, you know, smaller and smaller splintered groups of conspiracy theories and different ideas about the truth of the world. I always come back to the idea of education. Like, it's got, you know, people have got to learn how to evaluate stuff online. It's a huge task, and it's not something that happens in like a day. It's something that happens over a lifetime, and it involves learning a lot about context. Not just how to identify something as being false, but learning enough about truth in the world that you can, that your hackles go up and you can be suspicious when something just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, more specifically, you know, as you said, Ms. Augustine, it seems like there's Democrat and Republican channels. There isn't much of a common news source that everyone turns to. To close out the podcast, what specific changes do you think can be made both structurally within like the entire media and individually, changes individuals can make to stop the polarization and the, as you said, Ms. Augustine, the splintering of the news?
I mean, I think I talked a little bit about the individual. As in terms of systemic changes within the media industry, I'm not sure. But again, as an individual, I can do my best to make sure I'm reading a variety of sources. Mm-hmm. You know, always double checking with myself, like, does this make sense to me? Like, is this right? And just honestly, just knowing that misinformation is out there and that is rampant. And also being able to admit I'm wrong. You know, it's easy to fall into these traps of misinformation. I'm sure I've done it multiple times. And people need to be able to admit, yeah, okay, I fell into that, but I don't believe it anymore, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Reading a wide array of news sources, that's why I look at Fox. I feel like as a responsible citizen, I need to look at opposing viewpoints. Even if I don't necessarily have the instinct to trust them, it still sometimes helps me understand things that are going on in the world. But in terms of how to change the media landscape and get more, you know, more common sources, it's hard to know what to do. Mark, do you have an idea?
Well, I agree with what both you and Will said about things you do yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were a publisher, you know, or a, you know, capital E editor at a publication, it's about showing not necessarily complete balance, but openness and clarity. And presenting ideas to present ideas, which is what news is supposed to do, as opposed to just profiteering off provocation. So Chicago Trib, I think it's been about 3 months now. I don't know if you noticed, Ms. Augustine, since you've been reading it, they took all the page two opinion pieces and they moved them to the rest of the opinion page. And they said they did it because they wanted to be really clear.
Yep.
This is the news. This is the opinion and editorial.
Really appreciate that. Yeah.
And I really appreciated that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all in one place. And while it's a more conservative newspaper historically, they have a balance of voices on that opinion page, as does the New York Times between conservative and liberal. Like you can open the New York Times and read really serious conservative opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to me. And the problem with some of the alternative sources where you're only gonna get what you wanna hear because that's what they're selling. Because you wouldn't buy it if you didn't get just what you wanted to hear. So I hope that the more mainstream platforms will hold to that and that they will honor that and keep trying to keep that balance on their opinion pages.
One thing I found interesting about what you said, Will, is that, you know, that used to just be like the three main television networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, that would have the nightly news and every family would basically sit down and watch one of those. And they were all pretty similar. They all had a main male, white male as their—
White male guy, yeah.
Yeah, as their main broadcaster. And they ran sort of the same stories and they always had a feel-good piece at the end and it was very formulaic. And I think of those shows as only being watched by really old people, like, you know, people in their 80s and 70s are like, you know, used to that format. But then you tell me that you follow the NBC, what was it, was it their Twitter chat or what was it that on Snapchat? And I think, okay, good. They're diversifying the way that they are reaching people. And I think that is going to be key to maybe have some of those more standard voices go places where people are looking for alternative media.
Thank you for listening to the U High Midway's The Bubble podcast. Share if you enjoyed.